I envisioned myself just winning. And I knew I was going to win because I saw myself cross the finish line 20 million times. That night before the race, oh, I saw myself, I just pictured myself passing the finish line. And it happened the same way because in the final, like when I passed the finish line, I completely lost myself. I didn't know what was going on.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the IAAF Inside Athletics podcast. My name is Ben Harlow.
And I'm Katie Smith.
And we have got a jam-packed episode for you today. We're going to be discussing loads of Diamond League action from Shanghai, Eugene, talking about the upcoming one in Rome. We're also going to be discussing the hypo meeting in Gotsis with some crazy multi-event results from the Olympic and world champion, Nafi Tiam. And we're also going to touch on one of the IAAF's latest campaigns for Global Running Day, Run 24-1.
But first off, we are really excited to have Omar McLeod, the Olympic and World 110-metre hurdles champion on the IAAF podcast. You thought we couldn't top Dame Valerie Adams last week. Well, here you go. Here's a little insight into the life of Omar McLeod.
It was fun growing up, and I say that because I'm Jamaican. It's really fun growing up in Jamaica. It's hard at times growing up there, but I just remember having a lot of fun as a Jamaican kid growing up and, of course, watching track because, you know, track is our sport there. And those were some pretty, you know, we lived a reckless lifestyle being young and Jamaican. Like, it was just reckless. It was fun. It was gritty. It was a lot of challenge that really made me into who I am today. Mm-hmm. I'll take nothing away from growing up in Jamaica and how I grew up. You know, I grew up with my mom, who I was homeschooled for a little bit because she was a principal. She teach, so I grew up in school. I was born in school. My mom had me when she was a teacher, you know, so super grateful for that. Grew up running, you know, running barefooted, racing on the street with kids, running to shops, racing my little cousins, and, you know, just having fun. That's all I remember, was having fun and just being, just growing into myself.
Yeah.
You know, that was my foundation. Growing up back up in Jamaica, and, you know, I've obviously seen Usain Bolt and Veronica Campbell and those people that I really respected and see do it. You know, those were our foundation as well into why we really loved track and field, to be honest. So, you know, that was the roots.
You said sometimes it was hard
mm-hmm.
growing up in Jamaica.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
It was hard in terms of, like, just the economic system. Like, you know, we weren't as privileged mm-hmm. as a lot of people. And when I came to America, I was like, you know, these, not taken away from that, I was like, you know, there's just a lot of things that we didn't have that I came to America and I saw how privileged they were. You know, and I don't think privilege is the right word to use. I don't know, but they just had a lot of things that we didn't have growing up.
Yeah.
And that made me become so much more appreciative and humbled by just our beginnings. Mm. And sometimes I'm like, you know, maybe that's the reason why I am today. Maybe how it's the way it's because of the way I grew up, why I'm so successful. You know, so it just gave me the feeling of being grateful, of gratefulness. Like, I'm happy I grew up that way because I didn't grow up in luxury. I had everything I needed, but I didn't have everything I wanted. You know, there was a lot of times when we didn't have money to go to school, like stuff like that, just like typical stuff that Jamaican kids grow through. And I'm really, really proud of that.
Yeah.
You know why? Because it molded me. It gave me that sense of push and that sense of urge and just wanting to be somebody.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm really grateful for that. Hence, I had grown up somewhere else in a different country. Would I have been at this position sitting here as Olympic world champion? Probably not. I cannot tell, but I just knew deep down that that was a part of my success. That was a huge, huge part of my success. Mm. Yeah.
Did you get a sense of island fever when you were growing up in Jamaica? Because obviously it's a smaller island
mm-hmm.
Compared to, I don't know, some of the other countries that, like America, for
yeah.
example. Did you have a sense of, God, I want to escape and kind of have an opportunity elsewhere?
Yeah, honestly, yeah, definitely. I mean, when you grow up somewhere and you're so used to that place, obviously you feel the need of change.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, growing up in Jamaica, our ticket was always to get a scholarship to go somewhere else. You know, just to go overseas and get a scholarship to take care of, you know, scholarship to, first of all, we wanted a scholarship so we can, that our parents don't have to pay for school. And we wanted to, we had this huge aspiration of just going overseas and competing in the NCAA and having that shot of a degree and, you know, just being in a different environment just to feel, you know, and especially in Jamaica, everybody wanted to come. A lot of people, you know, were fascinated with coming to America. I knew, honestly, I wasn't. I'd rather be home. I wanted to be home. I didn't want to leave. I wanted to be home, but it was just a goal for track athletes in that sense where we just wanted to get a scholarship to go to NCAA and come, hopefully go back home after we get that shot, you know, get a scholarship or get our degree, we go back home. That was what I was envisioning. I never thought I'd go pro my sophomore year. Things would just escalate. My blessings would just come so quick. I never thought that. And it led to me staying in America because my coach was there, and obviously I didn't want to leave my coach, and the opportunities came while I was there, so I just ran with it.
When did you realize that this was a path for you?
Honestly, it was when my aunt died my freshman year of college. That, and it's sad to say, and I hate saying this, but my aunt's death kind of reintroduced me to myself. And as much as it pains me to say that, it's true. You know, and when she died, I just remembered that whole summer I just stayed in my house, in the apartment that I was in, and I didn't do nothing. I didn't leave. It reintroduced me to who I am and why I was doing it. I got a purpose as to why I was doing it. And that's when, in that moment, that's when I fell in love with track and field. That's when I became so passionate about it. Like, I've never felt that before. I was doing it, but I was just like going through the motion, honestly. And when then my aunt died, because me and my aunt was really close growing up. We were almost like best friends. And I always used to say, you know, you're going to see me at the Olympics, win the Olympics. I'm going to come take care of you. Because she used to help sending me to school. She used to help send me. So we had a great relationship. And she died, and then I just fell in love with the sport again. Or at least I had a reason as to why I was doing it again. And I knew I loved what I was doing. Like I said, yeah, I was going through the motion, but obviously, you know, there was a passion behind why I was doing it. Or else I could have chose anything else to do. But that's when I was like, okay, this is it. I love it. Like, I just fell in, like, that summer. Like, I just took that summer to just get to know myself more and just to, you know, just to get over the aunt. I mourned, got over her, let her go. And then I just fell in love with it. And I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is it.
What year was that?
2014.
So even before that, you'd had a lot of success in your career. I mean, 2011, you went to Lille in France for the World Youth Championship.
Yes.
So was that the first time you ever went abroad or to Europe or?
No, I don't. Well, we've been to Penn Relays and, well, yeah, that was my first, I think that was my first international trip to one of those big countries.
Yeah.
The world scene. Yeah.
How was that? Even knowing that you were going to France, for example.
Oh, how was that? I was so in the moment. I wasn't even like focusing on it. You know, like us kids, like we just, oh, we're going to France. Ooh, yay, yay. You know, it was that type of feeling. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to compete. Yeah, we were mindful that we're going there to compete, but who cared in that moment? Like, where you're, I'm just being honest. You know, that was it. That's what it was. Yeah, I'm going to France. I'm going to Lille, France. I'm about to go live my best life. I'm about to go to a country. Like, it was just, you know, it was just so amusing.
Yeah.
That we were going to that country. So, and yeah, I competed and I made finals in both. I did the 110 and the 4 hurdles. I doubled. And surprisingly, I made the finals in both. Got last place in the 400 hurdles.
Hey, you made it.
And at least I made it. But then I got fourth in the 110 hurdles. And I think if I had just focused on one, I would have had a medal in anyone I had focused on. But also, that was a turning point in my career, too.
Yeah.
That was when I was like, oh, hurdling. Yeah. This might be a thing. Started to take it seriously back then. You know, like when you go through life, sometimes you just, like I said, you just go through the motion until you have that one breakthrough or that one thing that solidified the fact that, oh, I'm doing this, and it gives you confidence It just takes that one, whatever it is, it just takes that one moment for you to really realize that, you know, hey, God, okay, I get what you're showing me. Okay, this is what I should do, you know. So, yeah.
After, so you went in 2013, and then you also got the Jamaican junior record as well.
Yeah.
110 hurdles.
And the four hurdles.
Yeah. Whoa. So surely, I mean, you say it wasn't a 2014, like that year that you felt that you could have a career in this, but you'd already set hurdles records.
Yeah. And the crazy thing, that's I was in high school.
Yeah.
Like when you're in high school, you know, you just never know. You're having fun, you're doing whatever, and you just never know. And honestly, I always say you cannot base your career off what you did in high school. Because I've seen a lot of people have tremendous success in high school, but they just found it hard to transition for some reason. You know, so at that moment, I wasn't so caught up in being a pro and all that. And I was even presented the opportunity to go pro in high school in my final year, and I just didn't want it. I didn't want it. I knew I wanted to go to college, and I wanted to experience. I wanted to grow as an athlete. Because I didn't... Was I ready to go pro? Absolutely not. I was a high school kid. I was not running times. Yeah, I ran 49 in the hurdles, and it was... I wasn't even aware that the height that I did in college, in high school, was the same height they did in pro. That's how oblivious I was to the fact to going pro. Like, I was so oblivious to going pro. I was like, you know, I didn't even know that. And they were like, you ran 49. Like, professional athletes are running 49. And I was like, in my mind, I was like, yeah, our height is lower. No, it's the same thing. I was like, oh, wow. You know, I was like, oh, it's the same thing. And I was like, okay, wow. But I knew, it was like, even though I ran 49, I wasn't conditioned to continuously run 49. Yeah. Trust me, when you're at Jamaica High School Championship, you can literally do anything just because of the adrenaline. And, you know, you run some times. I mean, yeah, you're talented, but you'll run some times that you never thought you'd run just because of the atmosphere and the adrenaline and just how much we love sport there. You know, so you do things that, okay, there was a one-time thing. Not saying, but you'll go beyond your expectations at a high school championship. And that was my fear. It was like, I was fearful of, okay, yeah, I run 49. Can I do that again? I don't know. So that's why I was like, I don't want to go pro because I'm not sure. Maybe it was just the adrenaline of the high school crowd that made me run that. You know, so I was like, I just knew I wasn't ready. I wanted to go to college and I wanted to develop as an athlete, you know, get a lot more experience, market myself more in the NCAA scene. And I did that. I just escaped. I just ran away from it.
What was it like moving to America?
Definitely a culture shock. It was hard because, like I said, I didn't want to. A lot of people don't know. Like, I was one of the athletes who didn't want to leave home. I didn't want to go to America. I didn't want to leave my family. I'm really close to my family. I'm a huge family person. I didn't want to leave my family at all. And I knew there was when I went to America, it was a culture shock. It was a different, you know. When I go to classes, it was hard. I hated it. English classes, when I'm writing my papers, there would be like the spelling, some spelling, because, you know, British, we are, like Jamaica, we're under the British system. So we spell words differently. And it was hard to adapt. Like, I'd get, you know, like, I lose marks off my papers because they think the spelling is wrong. When I go up to do presentations, because of my accent, they like telling me to start over because they couldn't understand. So it was like I had to force myself into learning their language. And, you know, it kind of changed the way I talk. Like, I started speaking like English a little bit, like their kind of thing, which is whatever. But it was just a culture shock, and I hated it the first year. Really hated it. You know, just the thought of I'm living somewhere else, I'm not going to be around my family. Because I'm a huge family person. When I have a bad day, I want to go home to family. Because I know nobody has your back like family does. Nobody has your back like that, you know, that genuine support that you can, like, if you have a bad day, you can go home and you can just, like, genuinely be vulnerable and just pour yourself out to your family. And I knew I wasn't going to have that. And it forced me to grow up. And, like, I don't regret it. A lot of people do it. And for me, it affected me different because I was such a huge family person. And at that moment, I knew my aunt was going through that issue before she died. And me not being able to be there for them. So, and especially after she died, oh, I wanted to go back home. But I knew she didn't want that. And surprisingly, she was one of the only persons who, you know, encouraged me and, you know, really told me the importance of going to college and getting a degree. And all that stuff. And honestly, I remember when I was going through a lot of pressure, I went to her and I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go pro. And she was one of the very few people that told me, follow your heart, go to college. And also, I knew coming back wasn't going to honor her. So I had to stay, you know, I had to stay there to just in honor of her. Right now, I'm doing all this is because of my aunt. I'm doing it because she wanted, we talked about it, and she wanted to see me successful. She wanted to see me be a world champion. And probably, it's scary because I don't know if that's the reason I got success so early. It's a blessing, but that was my drive. Nothing was going to stop me. Absolutely nothing was going to stop me. And I want to keep that drive.
Yeah.
I want to keep that drive of continuously winning and just having fun with it, you know, and just doing what I can just in honor of her. My whole career is going to be in honor of my aunt.
So I guess after your aunt passed and that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
I guess you weren't lying in terms of devoting your life to sport, because in 2015, it was, I guess, a breakout year
yeah.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
Talk me through that.
Yeah, like I said, that 2014, when my aunt died, that summer, I really sat down and I got to know myself and I set goals. That was the first, you know, people always say set goals in life. Like, my mom always told me, you just sit down and set goals. Psh, I never did that. I never did that until that moment. I really sat down and I healed and I mourned her loss. And that was the very first time I sat down in my closet. I'll never forget. Sat down in my closet and I was crying. And I wrote down everything that I wanted to accomplish that year and moving forward. And I accomplished everything. I wanted to be the best. I was like, I'm never going to lose again. I wanted to be the best in the NCAA. I want to break NCAA records. And I even told myself, I want to go pro 2015. I want to run 12. I had all these goals. I wrote down I wanted to run 7:45. And I broke the collegiate record with 7:45. Everything that I wrote down, I accomplished that year. And it was because of my aunt's death. That was a breakout year right after 2014 when my aunt died.
Mm-hmm.
And that just set my career up. Yeah, it was a little bit scary after I went pro. It was okay, this is a different level. But I was like, okay, I just tapped into, yeah, I remember when I sat down and I wrote this and I wrote all these goals. Just take it over to the pro scenery. Just going with the same mindset of just not wanting to settle, not going to lose. And that's what I did. That's why I've had success for the past 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, you ran sub-13.
Mm-hmm. And I did run sub-13 that year. Ran 12:97 at the Jamaican Trials. Made the net world team. And I told myself, yeah, I want to make the world team. The crazy thing is, when I went to Worlds and I made the finals. I wrote down I wanted to make the finals. I didn't even wrote down that I wanted to medal. And I think that's why it didn't happen. Because I just, you know, it was like, I wrote the 90 steps. I was like, okay, I want to make the world team. I want to run 12, and I want to go to Worlds. And I want to make the finals.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, my stupid self, I didn't write down that I wanted to medal. You know, but I just knew it was stages. And honestly, everything happened for a reason. Because maybe I shouldn't have medaled. Because when I didn't medal, I was furious.
Mm-hmm.
Jet just set everything up. I was like, okay, I didn't medal. Next year, I'm not losing. I'm going to beat everybody that beat me today in this finals. And honestly, making the finals was a gold medal for me. Because you know why? After all that, the year I've had, and I was really tired. My, you know, going after race every weekend and PRing and running a faster time every weekend. My body was shot, you know, so honestly going there and making the team and making the finals was a gold medal for me after all that I've been through. And I was hurt, pulled my hamstring before that meet, so it was like, you know, so I just winged it.
Was that your final collegiate year?
That was my final collegiate year, first world team as a senior athlete.
Yeah.
First time running with the big boys, so it's like, holy, this is not college, this is the guys who train for this. This is a pro athletes, you know, so making the finals was honestly a gold medal for me.
What did you think going to Beijing
mm-hmm.
when you knew you made the world team?
Yeah.
What was going through your head at that point?
It was a rush, because in that moment, that was the fastest time of the year, 12:97, and I remember this huge pressure that I've never felt before just came on me. Huge pressure. I was like, 12:97, world leader, going in with the fastest time. I just didn't know what to do with myself. And I think that's the reason I got hurt, where I put all that pressure on me, and I went my first pro meet. A lot of people don't know this, my first pro meet, pulled my hamstring over in Europe, went to Budapest, pulled my hamstring.
But I don't think, I'm not sure if anything could have prepared you for 2016.
Yeah.
You start off again, you have a crazy, crazy indoor season.
Mm-hmm.
You head to Portland.
Mm-hmm.
How was Portland for you?
Portland was amazing. Of course, it was in America, so I didn't have to travel overseas. That was an advantage. And my coaches were there. Coaches that I loved and respect so much, they were there. And that was the start. Like I said, losing Worlds that year was honestly... It needed to happen. It needed to happen, because maybe if I had won, I wouldn't have gone into the 2016 season with the mindset that I had. Because I'm not going to lose no race. I'm not going to lose no race. Absolutely not. Especially after running 12 and seeing what I'm capable of. You know, confidence goes a long way. When you do something, you'll be like, oh, I can do that. I was like, I'm not going to lose. So that just like, that started my career. That Portland, I will never forget that. That was started my career. And I broke my national indoor record, so ran 7:41. You know, that started my career. That's fast. You know, like.
Yeah,
it's because the year, and especially that year when Aries Merritt broke the world record, he ran 7:43 indoors. I was like, okay, I ran 7:41. I'm right there. So that was a confidence booster going forward in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So.
Do you look up to Aries?
I do a lot. I have so much respect for him, and just his career and how patient he was during his career, and especially what he had went through with the kidney thing,
mm-hmm.
and now he's still competing at such a high level, like.
He made the world indoor final.
World indoor final, like. Aries is one of those athletes. There are two athletes that really gets me nervous in the sport and hurdles, and that's Aries and Hansel Parchment. Because I just know on a given day when those guys are on it, especially Aries Merritt, he's the world record holder. You cannot take nothing away from him.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to compete. People don't see it. That guy knows how to compete. He knows how to make a final.
Mm-hmm.
He's what you call a seasoned veteran. You know, so he's one of the only athletes. Him and Hansel Parchment. That makes me really get nervous in hurdle races. And Hansel Parchment, she got something special. Like, when he's on, like, he's one of the athletes that really push me to my limit, too. Like, he's always right beside me in races. And we bring out the best in each other. Whenever Hansel Parchment and Aries in a race, it's going to be fast. Because I'm laser focused, because I just know at any given day when these guys are on it, there's something they're special.
I mean, obviously, the season went pretty well.
Yeah.
Talk me through that first meeting in Doha,
mm-hmm.
all the way through to the Olympics.
First meet in Doha was a success. I won there. Second meet, Shanghai, won there, 12:98. First, like, my 12 for the season, my first 12 for the season, and only 12, but it's fine. Next time in leagues, I remember even before the scare, like, before the Olympics, I had two falls. Before,
I remember.
A lot of people don't know that. It was a crazy, like, you don't want to go into the biggest game of your life, the biggest sporting event in the world, on a low. Like, I went in on the absolute low. Two falls in less than in a week, back to back falls.
Just before the Olympics.
Just before the Olympics, my tune. You gotta think that's my tune up race. I need to go into the Olympics on a high.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the ultimate dirt. I was so flat. I was flat going into the race. I was like, okay, that's cute. It's just. Fell in the last two races before the Olympics. That's how adorable. This is the best way to go into a championship. Let's go. I went home and I was like, I had to call my mom. I had to fly my mom up and we had to just sit and just figure out some stuff, prayed and just got myself back together before I went. As I knew, I was at a dark moment. Like, I cannot go to the Olympics like this. That was embarrassing. I cannot do that. I'm going there to represent my country. I'm going there to represent myself, represent God, represent my family, represent my country. I cannot go in such a low. That was an opportunity. That's a huge opportunity. I couldn't just go to the Olympics. I didn't want to go to the Olympics on such a low and be like, oh, well, like, I'm over it. Like, I didn't want to do that. That would have been so selfish. You know, so I had to call my mom and I had to be like, you got to figure some things out. You know, we had to pray and you need to give me your mama juice before I go.
You know,
yeah. I need to cry on your bosom again. You know, so I had me a little mommy and me time before I went to the Olympics. And that was it. That was it. Got myself back together and had some really good training sessions going into it. Me and my coach, we sat down and we spoke about the falls and they just got my confidence back. You know, it just takes a couple workouts for you to really like, okay, I'm back.
Mm-hmm.
Even going into the Olympics, I was still scared. And my mom told me, she was like, after that first round, you're going to be fine. And when the gun went off, I was fine.
That was it.
Yeah, the gun went off, cleared the first hurdle, and I was like, okay, I felt like myself again. Won the prelims, fastest time. Because I was like, I'm not going to the Olympics to lose. I looked at my mom, I was like, I'm going there for that gold medal.
Were you worried at all that you'd get carried away in the Olympic fever, being in the village and kind of thing?
And I did. Trust me, I did. It got to the point where I didn't remember my warm-up. I was like, you can just imagine how nervous I was. Because that was my first race. The prelims was my first race after the fall, for one. So a lot of people was just stressing on that. They were like, oh, they don't know what McLeod is going to do. He had two falls, and I get it. Like, so I kind of went into the Olympics as the underdog, which worked out in my favor. And I'm happy that happened. But I was so caught up in the, like I said, I get so geeky when I go to like these big meets. Like, so in the moment, that was the Olympics. Not only like I'm an Olympian, like I remember everything that happened from the day I arrived. I can go into detail if you want me to, but I will not. I knew everything that happened. You know, just waking up in the morning, being excited, watching all the athletes that I look up to, Serena Williams, just going to, I'm in the same village with them. Like, we're going to dinner. When we go to dinner, I'm seeing these people. Like, I wake up every morning just to watch them go. Like, I was in the moment.
And you'll hear a little bit more from Omar McLeod later in the podcast.
Okay, so let's talk about GOTSIS. We're currently recording this episode on the Saturday night, so we're halfway between, we've done day one. We've still got day two to go, but just from day one alone, GOTSIS never disappoints. Nafi Tiam has pulled it out of the bag yet again.
She's looking incredible. I mean, just talk me through some of those performances. They are...
Well, she started off decent, only just down from her personal best in the hurdles to start off with. But what was the real standout performance was her high jump, 2.01 metres, a world heptathlon best, bettering... Well, to be honest, she had the mark before anyway, when she jumped 198 with KJT in Rio.
Yeah.
So now, 2.01 metres, that's the world lead, higher than Maria Lasseskini
has jumped. I was about to say, that's the thing.
Crazy.
Do you think that's going to spur something in Lasseskini now to want to
maybe
go higher? Do you think she cares about heptathletes?
I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I'd love for her. I think Tiam, is actually scheduled to go down, is due to compete in Paris against Tiam, maybe.
Brilliant.
I could against Lasseskini, sorry. I could be making that up, but I think she'll definitely be in Brussels for the Diamond League.
So do you think Tiam's interested in doing individual events
as well?
But
when you're that good.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I mean, the heptathlon can be brutal, so she definitely has a fallback event if things don't go fully to plan. But wow. Also, other notable performances, Erica Bugard had a really good 100 metre hurdles, 12.8. It was a huge personal best. Just really, really cool. And then also, Rodriguez, the Cuban, is also doing well. She's the World Indoor Bronze Medalist from earlier this year. I guess one of the casualties so far, Caroline Schaefer, 3,000 a shot put, which is a bit of a shame.
What a shame, yeah.
Because she's such a talented athlete. It's never nice to see an athlete do 3,000 in multi-events just because it's so brutal.
But worth mentioning as well, Nafi Tiam's shot put distance.
Also strong, over 15 metres.
Yeah.
She's incredible.
What do we think about her the rest of her season? I mean, this is such a statement coming out and giving performances like this. And just to note as well, we had a mega performance from three or four athletes last year at GOTSIS, but Nafi Tiam is 56 points up on her.
Yeah, when she broke 7,000.
When she broke 7,000 last year.
Thing is, she said at the press conference that she wasn't targeting Clough's European record, which I think is 7,000, and might be 7,032. I could be completely making it up, but that number just seems to be coming to me right now. And she wasn't. She said she wasn't targeting that. She was just here to enjoy the event. But like, when you're 56 points up from a 7,000 performance from last year, anyway, this could be something special. So I'm really excited to see where this goes. The only thing I will say is, in London, after they all did those crazy scores at GOTSIS, it wasn't repeated. Yeah. She only did something like 6,700. So hopefully it will spur her on.
What is it about Gotsis, do you
I don't know, it's just magical. We have to go next year.
You do.
Also, on the men's side, there's been some great performances. Damian Warner, stalwart of a decathlete. He's currently leading. He's, you know, impressive as ever. How can you be a decathlete? 10 events, but still sprint 10.31 100 metres, yeah. And then long jump 781. Pretty impressive, really impressive. Yeah. Also, good performances from Kai Kaczmarek as well, who's currently in second place.
Yep.
And then also, nice to see Weibo of Estonia, Shaunae Miller's husband, I guess Shaunae Miller Weibo's husband, also doing well in third place.
I know we love to talk about power couples. That's got to be one now to keep power an eye couple. On.
Yeah. Imagine
I love
children.
How happy this makes us, power couples.
Well, power couples of athletics. Yeah. And this is only day one of Gotsis, though, so super exciting, super excited to see day two, and I really, really hope that she can get the record, go over 7,000 again, and also just the other girls challenge her as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's
what we want to see, also, challenge.
Yeah, challenge.
Because it's only going to make her go faster, or longer,
and
or higher.
And further.
Whoa. Deep.
Super deep. Anyway, Gotsis aside, there's been some really amazing Diamond League meetings since we last spoke. Shanghai, there was some real standout performances. I think one of the highlights for me was Stephen Gardner of the Bahamas, 400 metres. He's been dropping some crazy times, and he's, again, backed up his win in Doha.
43.99 he ran.
Yeah.
Meeting record in Shanghai in horrible conditions as well, must be added.
Yeah, the conditions were brutal.
Grim, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So brilliant running from him. I think he's going to be one to watch this season. Early form would suggest so. And with the likes of Wade van Niekerk kind of out of the picture right now, and he's absolutely smashing. He's absolutely smashing Isaac McQuala as well out of the park.
Yeah, it's really, really crazy to see somebody like an athlete as good as Isaac McQuala being made to look kind of normal.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Also, interestingly as well, while we're talking about sprinting, there was no Americans in the top four of the men's 100 metres, which is crazy.
What has happened?
Yeah, China and Britain, all the top four.
Yeah.
It's like so random.
So what did you make of Rhys Prescott out in lane 8 then?
I mean, Rhys Prescott was in the call room when the rest of them started, and then the last 20 metres he just, I don't know, literally how he did that. He was in last place. And then all of a sudden, he was just there.
And it's funny, isn't he, that he's one of those athletes that has actually proved himself quite a lot recently, making
the world final,
and yet he's still being put in lane 8, but is able to run these performances.
Well, yeah, now he's the Diamond League leader, so...
That's so exciting, and great as well from CJ Uja. I think people maybe thought he was a bit of a fluky winner overall last year, so good to see him back that up with a fourth place. That's, a good start for
and
him.
And the Chinese duo as well, Su and Ji, after super indoor success for the pair of them, really exciting to see China being, I don't know, put on the sprinting map.
I like it.
Yeah, me too.
I really like it.
Also as well, while we're on sprinting, there was a fantastic women's 200 metres. Again, our favourite, Shaunae Miller-Weibo.
Oh, what a hero.
Love her. She smashed it 22.06, which is a meeting record from Shippers. And I thought, what surprised me was Talu was only down in fourth, who looked kind of ordinary at 22.58.
Yeah.
Just because she was so strong in Doha, it really surprised me, but maybe she didn't travel very well. And
I think it's just another sign for me that reiterates how consistent Miller-Weibo actually is
She's insane.
She just looks so comfortable. It's like she's not even out of breath when she finishes.
Yeah.
It's kind of how I wish I was in life. I'm going to cut that
just climbing up the stairs. also, again, super hurdles races. Brianna McNeil, Kendra Harrison. This is... The women's hurdles is literally the story of the year for me, I think. It was an incredible story of Nelvis and Manning indoors with Kendra Harrison eventually taking their title. But again, Brianna McNeil, who was Rollins, she's looking pretty impressive. And to beat Kendra Harrison, the world record holder, obviously...
Yeah, I'm also just annoyed on a personal note because I put my Diamond League fantasy team together quite last minute. I thought, who is my nailed-on captain? Went for Kenny, and I just don't really know what she wants from me.
I know, it's really, what does she want from me?
definitely can.
And then also on the men's side, Omar McLeod, again.
Who you've just heard from.
Oh yeah, who we have also just heard from, and you'll hear more from. Yeah. He was fantastic again. I think it was a world lead. He said it was like 13-16. Yeah, so he's. I think he's also competing at Prix as well. So really exciting.
But only is it worth mentioning only a hundredth of a second, sorry, ahead of Orlando Ortega.
Yeah, actually,
it was a close one. It was not a walk in a park.
No, I mean with Ortega as well, he's one of those athletes who kind of. I don't know, is under the radar sometimes, maybe gets overlooked. But yeah, he is a very strong strong competitor, also called to see Sergei Shpankov back as well.
Yes.
He's great.
Absolutely. Just Hansel Parchment and Aries Merritt a bit further down the field than you expected?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Aries seems to have raced quite a lot recently, so I don't know.
It's just interesting if you listen to more of Omar later, he talks about those two being the names that he likes to race against. So interesting that he's coming out on top already. Yeah. Exciting times.
Also, give me your highlight from the fit from the field. Any specific event?
Oh, I think it would have to be men's long jump.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Mine too. The long jump was incredible. Luvo, I love Luvo. He's
what a character.
No, we're going to get him on the podcast. Totally.
100%.
8:56, beast of a jump. He
world lead
too. Yeah. And also, a note on the Chinese athlete Xi. Such a shame. Such
so
a shame.
He PB'd 8:43, brilliant.
Which
was
is
in the lead.
Huge.
Yeah, great jumping. And then injured himself in the final attempt. So that what a shame to actually see that in his home Diamond League as well.
I mean, there was also some other great Chinese performances in the women's throws as well.
Yeah.
Gong won the women's shot put, which is, again, she's becoming quite a consistent, well, she's consistently at the top, consistently dominant as well, which is really cool to see. And also Liu in the women's javelin as well. I think she got a medal in London last year, so she's being consistent as well, which is really good to see China coming forward as like an athletics powerhouse now.
Mm.
In events that maybe they weren't, well, I didn't really, weren't really known for before, so it's really cool to see that as well. Were there any other standout performances for you?
I just as per usual enjoyed watching the men's pole vault. Renaud Lavillenie, I think, you know, staking his claim, saying I'm not done yet, you youngsters, nipping at my heels.
Literally.
So he won that 5:81. Lisek as well went over 5:81. So, you know, great.
Really exciting.
Starting standards, we love it. We were talking about how well Mondo Duplantis is doing away from the Diamond League. He wasn't even there, so.
Well, he competed at yesterday in the Eugene in day one of
yes,
Eugene.
Yes, he did. That's what I was going to come on to.
He nearly won that, which was crazy, against Sam Kendricks. Sam Kendricks has been really up and down this season. Like I think he was unbeaten the whole of last season, and now. He's been a bit of a rocky year, but he's just won at Prix, but he was well down the field in
but
Shanghai.
He's obviously just another sign of him being such a well-liked character.
But he's such a good guy.
British pole vaulter Holly Bradshaw tweeted earlier that her coach wasn't going to be in Eugene for the Diamond League, and therefore Sam Kendricks was helping out with her coaching. Absolute darling.
He's a gem. He's an absolute gem.
For me personally, just wrapping up Shanghai then, I thought it was a really great meet. Considering the conditions weren't that nice, I wasn't expecting that many standout performances.
Yeah.
I think it was a real surprise, and it just got me excited about all these sprints, for sure.
Fantastic, fantastic meeting. Oh, I just love athletics. Okay, so Eugene, it was so good. There were so many standout performances, and it started with a bang with that men's. Well, it didn't open it, the men's 100 metres, but it was towards the start.
That was. Came from nowhere.
It was incredible.
And here's our reaction when we watched the race.
Oh!
It was bad, didn't it?
9:77! Oh my god!
That was so quick!
Oh my god.
Finally, we've got some.
What's the wind reading on that? Oh.
Sadly, the wind is 2.4 metres per second, which will...
The wind. That was crazy.
Ronnie Baker, I did not see that coming at all. I think all
either.
Focus was obviously, and rightly so, on Christian Coleman.
Yeah.
Ronnie Baker.
I honestly have no idea where that come from. Obviously, the wind being 2.4 metres per second is annoying.
Yeah.
And obviously, it does help a lot. I'd like to know what the wind corrected times would be for that.
But still, such a... sign for what's to come.
I know. Exciting. And only because he played second fiddle to Coleman throughout the whole of the indoor season, it's quite strange to see like how they flip the tables.
I still, though, I don't know if you agree, see Coleman coming back to...
Well, Coleman will
go
be in,
faster again.
Coleman, I think this, Coleman will be in Rome, and I'm not sure the Baker will be as well, but that could be cool if there's another rematch there as well.
Yeah, and
following that throughout the season.
Yeah, and a mention as well in third place, Rhys Prescott kind of did what he did again in Shanghai and just came through right at the end. Absolutely stonking finish.
Yeah, his pickup is fantastic. His top speed must be crazy.
We'd like to see him in a relay, wouldn't we?
Yes.
That'd be exciting.
Yeah, with a rolling start. I read somewhere as well that he plans to go to 400 metres because he thinks that might be where his future lies because he is a taller guy.
Wow.
He does have that Usain Bolt-esque build to him though, do you know what I mean? He's very tall.
That's
he's not
very
like
true.
He's not like Coleman or Baker, that's shorter, powerful.
The men's 100 is where it was at in Eugene.
Yeah, I agree. Women's 100 was also good as well. Talu is back. So yeah, after her slight dip in form in Shanghai, it's cool to see that she's come back again with Muriel Ahure as well. Ivory Coast, was it 1-2, I think?
It was indeed.
They both ran really, really well. I think it's shame for Tori Bowie as well,
pulled up,
injured. I'm not really sure what happened with her, but... There was also in sprinting, the men's 200 metres as well. Noah Lyles was incredible, and it was a legal wind as well. Was it 2 minutes per second?
1969.
Yeah, that's crazy fast. And he made the world champion look mediocre. He nearly beat him by a second.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Is that crazy, Ben?
It is crazy. And the men's shot put.
Men's shot put, that's what I wanted to talk about.
So good.
Ryan Krauser.
Yeah, where did that come from?
And I think you've got a good stat for this one as well.
Yeah, it's the first time four men have ever thrown further than 21.60 in one competition. I think the fourth place was 21.84.
Wow.
From the Brazilian guy as well, what a step up from him. Where did that come from as well? And also our boy Tom Walsh. We do love Tom Walsh. Basically.
Yeah, but he was down the field today. Right. Fourth.
Was he fourth?
Yeah.
Oh my god. 21.84. Tom Walsh, wow. Anyway, fantastic competition.
Yeah,
along with that, what were your other highlights?
Women's 400 metres. Shawnee Miller-Weibo looking supreme again. Has she been beaten this season?
I don't think she has, 49.50 as well. That would win pretty much every major
championship. And across any distance right now, she looks just absolutely unbreakable.
Yeah, I thought, what was a shame, I'm pretty sure Sawa Eid Nasser, the Bahrainian girl who got a medal in the 400 last year in the World Champs, she was down to run, I swear, but she didn't seem to be there, along with Alison Felix also pulled out.
Shame we couldn't have seen her, actually.
Yeah, there would have been a really good head-to-head with Phyllis Francis as well, who also ran pretty well. Outside of that, Casta Semenya dominated the 800 again.
Genzebi Dibaba looking strong.
Yes, she did look really strong. Speaking of middle distance races, Shelby Houlihan taking the women's 1500 metres was so impressive. When she came, because it looked like Laura Muir was gonna win.
Right,
about 200 to go, she started to overtake. But then Shelby Houlihan came from nowhere, and then she just demolished like a pretty world-class field there. She set a huge personal best, 3:59.
And Jenny Simpson, you could tell she wanted to win it today in the States. I think she wasn't expecting that to be taken off her from someone so far back in the field. What a run.
Yeah, Shelby Houlihan kind of came on my radar during the indoor season when she ran pretty well at the US trials. She didn't perform like amazingly well in the World Indoors in Birmingham, but she is in fantastic form. It's a shame there's no major championship this year for the Americans at Global Major Championship. Good run from Laura Muir as well to get second place as well. I thought she was going to win it from 200 to go. 100 to go, I thought she was going to go backwards, but then she came back again.
Yeah. It was really good race.
It was an emotional roller coaster.
You seem pretty worn out.
So, the whole of Eugene, if you had to pick one favourite performance, what would you go for?
Event or individual?
Individual.
Got to be Baker in the 100 metres, hasn't it? I mean, I just think in front of a home crowd when all the attention was on Coleman, to produce something that special, I know the wind was too high for it to count, but I just think that must be such a sign to him that he's doing the right kind of thing.
Yeah, I think my highlight would have to be Ryan Crouser in the men's shot put. To throw over 22 metres is a huge achievement anyway, but in such a high-quality comp as well, it just kind of came alive. It's made me really excited for the men's shot put just in general this whole season. So, yeah.
And probably worth mentioning as well, Christian Taylor, 17.75.
Yeah.
Can't go away lightly with that.
And he's also like running 400 metres as well this season. Triple jump and 400.
Mixing it up.
Really, really impressive guy. Excited to see. I'm also excited to see how fast he can go over 400 this season as well. Whether he does any more, it'll be interesting to see. Mm. I'm always really interested in athletes doing different events. Mm. So on the ahead of the first Diamond League in Doha, Shaunae Miller-Wiebo did an interview where she said that she would consider trying a heptathlon.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
FETM, get ready.
Yeah, someone's coming for your gig. She'd do pretty well. I'd really like to see that. It's like, Renaud Lavillenie tried the decathlon as well before. Just like seeing athletes do events.
Different things.
Yeah.
Makes you must learn new things from it.
I think that's the best thing about these kind of off years where there's no major championship, you see athletes kind of dabbling in different areas. So yeah, overall, Eugene,
success.
I approve. Next, I want to talk about an IWF campaign which is linked to Global Running Day. So this is on the 6th of June. The IWF is doing, the campaign is called Run 24-1, and it's essentially 24 cities in 24 hours, 24 1-mile races. So
tell me about it. Why? What was the impetus for this?
So basically, it all kind of came from the idea that athletics as a sport, we are so global. We spoke about it at the World Champs last year, how there was such a diverse selection of countries competing, getting medals. You don't see that in many other sports. And I think the IWF want to celebrate the fact that we are so global and everybody can run.
One thing, as you just said there, so beautiful about running is all you need is a pair of trainers. Exactly. You don't even need them. You don't need any equipment. You can just run. And I think that's such a celebration across the world of every nation being able to do that.
Exactly. And I mean, Global Running Day, I think this is the third official edition of Global Running Day. So the IWF has just set up their own side campaign off the back of that. And it's going to be so exciting. There's going to be a live stream. So read you a list of some of the cities that are going to be a part of this. We're starting in Auckland, which is where Valerie Adams is the team captain for Auckland.
Brilliant.
And we finish in, I think it's Toronto. Oh, no, it was Vancouver, where Inaki Gomez is the team captain as well.
It's almost like we knew. We planned it all.
We're going through Auckland, Melbourne, Tokyo, Beijing, Bangkok, Delhi, Minsk. There's so many more. Berlin, London, Rabat, Sao Paulo, Buenos Aires, Toronto, Havana, Lima, Mexico City, Los Angeles, Vancouver, and so many more. It's going to be so exciting, and literally anybody can take part. You can sign up if one of those cities is anywhere near you. You can sign up. I mean, you can also fly to that city and compete there.
Or
too.
You can just do it where you are and be part of it, knowing that it's happening in other places.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be really exciting. So it's 24 1-mile races of basically just getting people running, and I think it's really important to spread that message as well of how inclusive we are as
a sport. Definitely. And we'll be talking about it on social media and things like that, so you can follow it all there, can't you?
Yeah, it'll be all over social media. You can head to the Run 24-1 website as well, which is run24-1.org. All information will be on social media as well. You can follow the live stream. I think all sorts of people are being roped into doing some presenting and that kind of thing. I think some of the podcast clips are going to be put onto the live stream as well. So it'll all be really exciting. I think I'll be roped into doing some bits as well.
Excellent.
So if you want to see me in action.
That will be the highlight of my day.
Definitely. So just to wrap that up, that is Wednesday the 6th of June, 24 hours. So if you do love athletics as much as we do, we know you'll be watching all 24 hours.
So, Rome Diamond League in just 2 days' time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so excited. Ben and I are on our way there as we speak. Well, no, not really.
This, I mean, as you're listening to this, we are on our
way
there.
I'm getting a bit confused with this whole sort of time warping. Yeah. Are we in Doctor Who?
Time travelling, yeah.
Yeah. What did I say? Warping.
Time warping. I don't...
Or can you be in a time warp?
I'm not...
What is a time warp?
This is for a different podcast,
yeah,
I feel,
maybe. I think maybe we went to the wrong room. Anyway, Rome Diamond League, going to be huge. Exciting. We're going to speak to loads of different big names and athletes while we're out there. So get excited for the podcast following this already.
Yeah. Also, if you guys have a look at the start list of Rome and see any athletes that you're particularly interested in and would like to hear from, let us know and we will chase them down and get content from them.
So I will literally chase them.
Katie's really fast.
I'm so fast. This is why they don't let me race Shawnee Miller. It would actually be unfair on... Well, me.
Yeah, could you run 400 metres? I don't know.
But yeah, just to talk you through some of the events going on, we've got the men's pole vault, my favourite.
Yeah.
We've got Discus Women's is back.
Sandy P, you had to get her. No, we'll be giving you loads of live action from the Mix Zone as well, which would be really cool. And yeah, I think also coming up, what's going to happen? We can also discuss... day two of GOTSIS as well, yes. in 2 weeks' time. So,
and what that means for the summer
and
ahead.
Oslo and Stockholm.
Oh my god. Stop it. It's coming thick and fast.
Yeah, there was so much to look forward to. And also, as we always say, we really, really appreciate your feedback. Any reviews, any mentioning us on Twitter, it's really helpful just so we know what you guys want so we can make this better for you. So Katie, what is your Twitter so you can...
@K_CroydonSmith.
And mine is @_BenHarlow.
Is that a bit of a struggle then?
I actually forgot what my...
too many symbols. But yeah, we just want to know what you guys want. We're going to bring it for you.
Yeah, or you can mention the IWF Twitter account as well, @IWF.org. Make sure you follow us there and on Instagram and Facebook. Little plug. So you heard from him in the first half of the podcast. We're going to go back to Omar McLeod. Actually, at the end of this interview, he sat up and he was like, wow, this was like therapy. And he said, I should start charging people for this. So
you are also going to learn just why he loves Chipotle so much.
Oh, yeah.
You breaking news.
Yeah, I won the prelim, fastest time.
Was there a break, and then was it semi-final, final in the same night?
Yeah, I think it was semi-final, final in the same night. So one of the semi-finals went to the fastest time. I was like, I'm not coming here to lose. So I was like, I'm going to go there, and I'm going to show them that I'm back.
Mm-hmm.
Semi-final, fastest time, final.
Before you get to final.
Talk about that.
Yeah, but you just won the semi-final. Mm-hmm. Were you just like, I've got this? Was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I knew I was back. Mm-hmm. After those two runs, I was back. But I, like, in the back of my head, I was like, okay, this is the final. You have to play your cards right. Anything can happen in finals. And I remember, I just had a flashback into 2015 when I hit almost every single hurdle in the final. And I just knew that in any hurdle final, it always boils down to who had the cleanest race. So I went in there with a strategy. Not only did I get myself back, but I had a strategy. Because I was ready to win. So I just played every card in my head. I envisioned myself just winning. And I knew I was going to win because I saw myself cross the finish line 20 million times. That night before the race, I just pictured myself passing the finish line. And it happened the same way because in the final, like when I passed the finish line, I completely lost myself. I didn't know what was going on. The feeling that came over me, like I can really beat any day. It's indescribable, the feeling that I had. I just completely lost myself. That was like, it was like a feeling, I did it, like, chills washed me, like, just completely lost myself. It was the most amazing feeling. And then in that moment, I was like, I want to feel this every championship. Because I know what it feels like, and it's almost contagious. And at Worlds, I was like, I want to feel that again at Worlds last year. And played out again. So it's a feeling that I'm really contagious. It's really contagious, and I'm addicted to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being addicted to heroin or whatever, or coke. I'm addicted to winning. And just that feeling. I'm really addicted to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After the Olympics, was I guess the media around it must have been insane.
Yeah.
Because 2015, obviously, you made the final, but you didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
So you weren't the central focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How was it being the number one guy that everybody was after?
That's a great question, because it was an interesting pressure. Because I love pressure, and that's what sports is about. And sports is about pressure and competing, and it's about bringing people together, and it's about love and happiness. And that's all, everything that I was feeling, that pressure. And pressure is a privilege for me. I love that. So it was like, okay, I'm on top. And I loved it because it held me accountable. See, that's the thing I'm telling about, like, going into championship year, you're just like, you have no choice but to be so strict about everything. You hold yourself at such a high accountability, and you get so obsessed with winning and the championship that coming up, so you don't have time for nothing else, you know. But I liked it because people were looking up to me, and the expectations were here, and I had no choice but to meet those expectations, not only for them, but especially for the goals I had for myself and the expectations I had for myself.
I mean, you ran sub-13 again, another season in a row.
Yeah.
Going into London 2017, you had a good season again, generally around the circuit.
Yeah.
You were the Olympic champion.
Mm-hmm.
You are the Olympic champion.
Yeah.
Does that still feel weird to hear?
Honestly, yes. Because I never thought I'd say that at such a young age. And if, in all honesty, if I'm going to be honest, I went through a phase of what's next, especially after winning Worlds last year. I was at a point where I was like, I had to take down all my certificates, and I had to put away all my trophies, and I had to hide them because I needed some motivation moving forward. You know, it's like, reaching success so early. Yeah, I wanted to be Olympic champion. Yeah, I wanted to be world champion. But in the back of my mind, I was like, okay, I probably will get that in the latter parts of my career, like when I'm 28. I never thought it would come so quick. You know, and I struggled a little bit into trying to find another motivation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, I had goals. Like, I wanted to, I love sprinting. I love the 200. I wanted to do that. But there's this thing of like, okay, you reach success so early, and it's a scary thing. And I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't idolize nobody growing up, because nobody spoke about that. Nobody spoke about the challenges you go through after all this success, especially so young. Nobody spoke about that. You always see them on TV, you see them winning races, and I respected that's the side they didn't want to show. But to be honest, people. Young athletes want to see that. They want to know about that. They don't want to know about what it's like after success, because it's challenging. And I've heard athletes like Tiana Bartello spoke about it. She was like, she said she was lost. And I heard her say that, and I was like, she said it before I won Worlds. She said it in an interview. I don't remember where it was, but she said it. She was like, she won early, really early, and she just lost herself. And in the back of my mind, I was like, oh. Oh, you know what I mean? Like, it just went through one ears and came through the other. I didn't take her seriously until after I won Worlds. And I was like, okay, wow. What's next? You know, I've done it all as a hurdler. The only thing left for me to do is break the world record, and that's a goal. And I'm still fearful of, after I break the world record, that I wouldn't want to do hurdles again. You know, it's just like, us athletes, we go through those stuff. We think about those stuff, but a lot of people, they just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And I'm very open, and I'm very honest about my feelings, and I'm very vulnerable when I talk about how I feel. I went through that phase, and it was really hard. And that was honestly one of the reasons why I wanted to divert from track a little bit into trying to find something else to do.
So, London 2017,
mm-hmm.
If you could sum it up in a sentence, what would you say?
The best championship of my life.
Really?
One of the best, not even one of the best moments of my life.
Okay.
In a lot of ways. For one, my mom was there. Love that lady so much. My mom was there. there was a lot of pressure surrounding the fact that Usain didn't win, Lane didn't win. You know, Jamaica was having a really bad championship. And
did you feel it in the camp?
Oh, yes. The demeanor was thick. It was so daunting. Like, I've never felt that before. That pressure that came on me, never felt that before. Never felt that before. And it was crazy. And you can just imagine, you know, everybody was depending on me. Like, Jamaica, everybody was like, okay, we have McLeod next. You know, he has to win. He has to win, or else it's going to be a really, really bad championship for Jamaica. And it was a responsibility, and I took it upon myself to bring the light back. And I channeled it in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of pressure, but I channeled it in a positive way in terms of, okay, this is an opportunity for me to gain some respect.
Yeah.
Or, because honestly, I didn't feel respected as much from my Jamaican people. That's just the honest truth.
Why?
Partly because I lived in America, and just not being around them and feeling that love, like Usain and Elaine do.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an honest opinion. This is how I felt. And I was like, this is an opportunity for me to gain that respect.
To prove to them.
To prove to them that, yeah, even though I'm overseas, like, we're still athletes, and we do it because of you guys. We do it because we love you guys. Mm-hmm. We're here representing you guys. It's not easy.
Yeah.
Do you think it's easy for me to be away from family in another country training? Absolutely not. They're not mindful of that. It's harder.
Yeah.
Getting the job done almost on my own. I'm not around family. You know how much? That's 20 million times harder. But I took the responsibility, like, you know what, hey, I'm going to bring some light back. At least bring some light back to Jamaica.
Yeah.
And I channeled it in a positive way, and I was like, this is an opportunity for me to just go out there and do that. And especially for hurdling, it was just so much.
Yeah.
You said the sprints didn't get it done.
Yeah.
I'm a hurdler. I'm gonna go out there and win for that. And I knew I wanted to inspire hurdlers. Like, we might fail in sprinting, who has been so dominant for years. A hurdler can step up and do it. You know, so it was just a lot of factors.
Yeah. You said it was the best moment.
Yeah.
Of your life, potentially.
Yeah, when I actually, yeah.
It is?
When I passed that finish line and when I won.
Yeah.
Again, that contagious, that feeling that I felt at Rio, it was somewhat different this time.
How come?
Because of everything that I had on me, my shoulders going in.
Relief?
Yeah. I didn't feel relief in Rio. It was more joy,
yeah,
for me in Rio. But this one was different. This one was so special. There was joy. It was a component. It was a mixture of everything.
Yeah.
I was happy. I was overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Relief. The joy. Just, yes, I did it. Like, it was so crazy. It was special. It was a special moment.
Yeah.
And then my mom was there, and I went over and hugged my mom, and she knew what I was going through.
Yeah.
So be able to hug her and just release everything. Yeah, I'll never forget that championship.
The stadium as well that night was crazy.
Yeah, it erupted.
Mm.
And even the stadium, though, like people in London, you know, because people in London, they love Jamaicans. A lot of Jamaicans live there.
Yeah.
So going into that race, everybody, people in the stadium knew what I had to do. Like, okay, if Omar wins, then this will take off a little pressure off Jamaica. It will make them look good a little bit, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just imagine just thousands of people, the crowd just knowing, like, okay.
Almost like a home champ.
And then, yeah, home champs, and them knowing who you are, and them knowing what you have to do, and everybody knew the disappointment of what happened to Bolt.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay. Trust me. Yeah.
When you saw what happened to Bolt,
mm-hmm.
obviously that happened before your mm-hmm. race. Did that impact you or the rest of the camp?
Honestly, it did, because the Olympics, I fueled off Usain winning and Elaine winning, because, you know, they went before me.
Yeah.
I used that as a fuel.
Mm-hmm.
This time was the other way around, where they didn't win, Usain didn't win, Elaine didn't win. So it's like, okay, there's no fire going into it. Like, there was no motivation.
Yeah.
This isn't a championship. We're a team. We need each other. We feed off each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feed off other people's success, because I'm so genuinely happy for other people's success.
Yeah.
And when I see them do it, I want to go out there and do it too.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like that for this time around. And that's when the pressure came. I was like, okay, I have to go there and I have to shine my own light. In that moment, I was like, okay, you've trained for this. You didn't train with Elaine. You didn't train with Usain Bolt. Everybody have their own path. Everybody have their own destiny. I had to accept that in a moment. I was like, okay, I have to go out there and shine my own light. I have to go out there and do it for me. Like, this is my moment. Mm-hmm. In that sense, it was my moment. And honestly, at the Olympics, even though I won, there still wasn't a lot of celebration around me winning the first Olympic gold medal. And a lot of reasons that I don't want to talk about, but it's just, I felt like my moment kind of got taken away. But that was my moment. That was my moment. And I'm happy I did. I had that moment.
Do you feel you were fully appreciated in London as mm-hmm. opposed to Rio?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
And I guess after your emphatic win, a few days later, you returned for the 4x1.
Yeah.
How cool was it being asked to be on the 4x1 team?
That was another part too. That's why I said that was the best championship. Being on the same, imagine being on the same team with Usain Bolt.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody I grew up, like, I was a kid running barefoot, I see this man on TV doing it big, like, look up to in so many ways, like,
mm-hmm.
just had so much respect for.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, he wasn't an idol of mine, but I just had so much respect and I look up to them. You know? And just to be on the same team with him. I've always been a bucket list. I want to run with Usain Bolt before he retires. And to be able to do that.
And the last chance as well.
The last chance. That's how I knew that championship was my moment.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I knew that I need to embrace this.
What was the atmosphere like lining up?
It's crazy. It was so exuberating. Like, it was an energy that I've never felt in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you saying, this is what it feels like to be you? Like, you know, because people know, like, he was on the team. Like, you know, it was a 4x1, so they're expecting Usain Bolt to come out again.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is what it feels like to be you?
Mm-hmm.
And just walking out with him, it was just like, wow. I'm the starter. I'm first leg. It starts with me. You know, like, I have to get the baton around. I have to do my very best
mm-hmm.
just to give them the very best start. And of course, we wanted him to, like, go out with a bang. I wanted him to win.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about me in that moment. It was all about Usain Bolt on his final race.
Yeah.
So I was like, I wanted to play my part. I had the baton in my hand. It was first leg. You know how pressure that is? I had to give the best start of my life just to make sure that I set him up for a win.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, like I said, it was a good pressure, and I wanted to be in that moment. And it just fueled me to just go out there, and I gave the best start. Great start. I gave the best I could.
After you ran that, your first leg, mm-hmm. handed over, it was fine. What were you thinking?
Like, yeah, I did my part, but I just knew I was still so nervous. Yeah, I did my part. But I knew it was like the baton has to go around to him. He's an anchor leg. So I was just like, crossing my fingers, you know, hoping that, and I trusted the other guys to do. I trusted that they were gonna do a great job,
mm-hmm.
and that's a part of being a team, you know, especially a relay team. You trust each other, and I just like did this, and I was like, okay, come on, did my part. Yeah, I did my part. It didn't just end with me. I didn't just want to walk off the track. No, I wanted to see all my other teammates do their thing and bring the baton to him. He got the baton, and we all know what happened afterwards.
Yeah, what did you think when that happened?
My heart dropped.
Yeah.
My heart dropped. My heart dropped. Like, yeah. It was a really bad. It was a hard moment just to watch him on his last race.
Yeah.
Go down like that, you know?
It's poetic.
It was poetic. It was really poetic. Fairy tale almost.
Yeah. With not quite the fairy tale.
But not quite the happy ending.
Yeah.
You know? It's crazy. And just to walk over to him and I saw a different side of Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
That man is humble. And he said three words that changed my whole perspective on sport and him in a person and successful people. He said, I'm sorry. Three words. I am sorry. And he don't know what those words did for me.
Mm-hmm.
He still don't know. I saw a different side of this man, like, here he is on the ground in pain, being who he is, the absolute legend.
Yeah.
And he said, I am sorry.
What did that mean to you?
It meant so much. It showed me humility. Mm-hmm. It showed me character. And you think, this man who's so successful, he didn't have to say that. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to apologize for something that so tragic that happened to him.
Yeah.
But it just showed me that, yeah, it was his moment, but he wasn't selfish. He was doing this for us also.
Yeah.
He still don't know what those words said, meant to me.
Yeah.
You know? And that's why I was so emotional. I couldn't hold back the tears afterwards. I'd give the interview, I cried.
Yeah.
Because of those three words, and of course him going down, but this man said, I'm sorry.
Your training group is crazy.
Ridiculously crazy.
Probably the highest quality hurdles group in the world.
Yeah.
Who, list off the names. Mm-hmm. There's, yeah.
Kenny Harrison. There's Corey Carter. Leah Nugent. Sydney McLaughlin. And there's a lot of, like, upcoming hurdles. Jasmine Quinn, Camacho Quinn. So it's a hurdle caliber there. And then we have some young male athletes, Daniel Roberts, who trains with me, coming up. And just the philosophy of hurdling there
is
at such a high standard.
Yeah.
And it's almost like on hurdle days when we go to practice, it's just like an Olympic final. Because we go at it.
Mm-hmm.
We go at it at practice. And it's like our hurdle intensity is just
So what's next?
Stronger than ever. Honestly, what's next is focusing on the season. Just, like I said, I've waited. I've been patient. The whole season I've been patient. Yeah, I've had good performances here and there, but I've been patient. And I think it's time now me finding myself again in a lot of ways. I'm just ready to go out there and do something special. Like you say, I'm waiting on God, and I've sit down and I've cheered everybody on. Genuinely being happy for somebody. Still just being patient. And even if it takes the last race of the season for me to do something special, it's going to happen. I'm being patient. You know? And like I said, this year is an off year, and I'm definitely just going through having fun and wanting to have fun with the sport again and just taking it easy. And like I said, not being so hard on myself. Maybe that will be the formula or the key to having like breakthrough performances. I don't know. But that's just the approach I have for this year. Just letting go. Having fun. Yeah, I still have high expectations. My coach has high expectations. He helped me. He holds me accountable. He helped me a lot. Even when I was going through these phases, he helped me a lot. Because I can talk to him about anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so having a coach like that, who, he doesn't allow me to slip. He's not going to give up on me. He didn't give up on me when I was going through that phase. And he knew it. He knew I wasn't in it. Even when I was competing, he called me and was like, You're just going through the motion.
Yeah.
You're just going to a meet, and yeah, you're competing, you're winning, but your mind is not there. He knew.
Mm-hmm.
And to have somebody like that, it's a huge blessing. I love that man. He's like a father. He's really strict and hard sometimes, and sometimes he gets under your skin. But I'm grateful for it, because I needed a coach like that. Not only like a coach, but a father figure. And he cares a lot. And he gets like that because he loves all his athletes and he really cares.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that he didn't allow me to lose myself so much. And McLeod is back.
Time for some questions from social media.
Let's go.
So, one from Twitter. This is from Chris Brown.
Okay.
And it says, as Jamaica's only gold medalist at the World Champs last year, do you feel any extra pressure this year? Or were you heartened by the success at the Commonwealth Games of the non-sprinting athletes like Aisha Parolia, Dakers, Thompson Dodd?
Oh yes, it was so refreshing to see. Warmed my heart, absolutely. And it's like, when I even regretted not being there, just to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
But coming off being the only gold medalist, you know, I still knew, it wasn't just, I was only gold medalist, but it wasn't just about me. And I didn't have the mindset, oh, yeah, I'm the next big thing. Because I knew, I trusted Jamaican athletes. Like, we're a talented nation, you know? And I knew a lot of athletes are going to step up. Well, it was just a matter of time for them to get that moment,
yeah,
or that exposure, and just to see them do it, it was a refreshing thing. And yeah, I'm really heartened by the fact that they came up and did that, and it just shows that we're growing as a nation. We'll be fine.
Okay, this question from Instagram, and this is, you've already achieved so much in the 110-meter hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought about trying the 400-meter hurdles? I guess that was a part.
Yeah. My coach wants to see me run it, the 400-meter hurdles.
Really?
And I think, yeah, and I think I owe him that.
This year?
No, not this year. Probably after the Olympics. Set a goal after the Olympics after 2020, which were like, you know, solidified hurdles, finally sprint hurdles. Yeah, we're gonna experiment. I owe him that. I think I owe him that, and I especially want to see what I do with it. So,
what do you think you could do?
Honestly, competitively, I can do a 48.
Yeah.
Yeah, competitively, like, and being, you know, especially with having a coach like him, they know telling what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
With coach like Coach Flo, like. I know he transformed me into a great 400-meter hurdles. It's going to start by losing a couple muscles, a couple weight, but it's a start.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Another question is, what do you think about on the start line?
Your mind goes through so much. First, I think about, why did I do this? Like, why did I put myself into this immense pressure? Like, why am I so cruel to myself? Like, what am I going to eat afterwards? Like, let's get this race over with. Like, so much go through your mind rushes. Yeah.
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 And the final question is, why do you like Chipotle so much?
Okay, so Kenny Harrison made me love Chipotle, because I used to love Popeyes. Popeyes used to be my thing. And of course, Coach took that out of my diet. And now, so I was like, I need to find something else. And I saw how much Kenny liked going to, she don't love it that much, but she likes going there. And I just fell in love with it. Like, it was that fast food. Like, it was not. It's not. It's healthy, but it was like that place I can go to. Just like I used to just go to Popeyes and just eat unhealthy and, you know, fulfill my guilty pleasure need. I felt like, okay, let me just go to Chipotle and fulfill this guilty pleasure need, which is healthy. So
yeah, living your best life.
Yeah, living my best life. It's an off year. Let's live our best lives. Hashtag. That's my motto for this year. Off year, live your best life.
Awesome, thank you so much.
No
for
problem.
Chatting to us.
That was great.
Cool.
That was like a little
therapy
session.
Glad you enjoyed it.
Thank you. We all need that.
What a great guy. I love Omar. He is great. I think I just love all athletes. If you're an athlete, I probably like you. I think that's just a general heart.
Absolutely. And I think he's so honest in that interview. He gets across the pressures of being an athlete, but also the pressures of just being a young human,
yeah,
as well.
He is still so young.
Yeah,
he's so
young. Only 24 years old.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just love how candid and freely he does speak.
Yeah.
He's just such a brilliant personality.
And just, he's one of the few people now who will ever be able to talk about Usain Bolt in that personal aspect. You know, I did his last ever race with him. That is massive.
Yeah, that is crazy. Really crazy.
That is all we've got time for this week. So next time you'll be joining us in Rome. Or after Rome. We'll sort of be in Rome. We still haven't figured out where we are in this time situation.
I think when the next podcast comes out, we are definitely not in Rome anymore.
No,
but it'll be very Rome-centric with stuff from Oslo and Stockholm and loads of other bits as well. So, yeah, I think that is it. So,
and remember, if you leave a review, leave your Twitter handle, you could be our fan of the month.
Right, okay, guys. This has been really great, and you will hear from us in 2 weeks' time.
See you later.
Bye.